All right, Tim. Over the weekend, we concluded the NFL draft. I think the biggest takeaway is the Big Ten that led the way in the first round, 11 first-round picks. The SEC with 7, the ACC, the Big 12 with 6. However, the SEC played the long game, 87 overall draft picks. That did set a record for the NFL draft, and it also expanded their gap between the Big Ten and the SEC from the previous year, where I think the gap was only 7 picks. I think that's right. I'm trying to do this all from memory. So it went from 7 up to 21. It sets a record, and it widens the gap overall. I guess when you look at the draft, did it leave you feeling differently about college football in any shape, form, or fashion?
So I think it is fair to discuss, 14 total players from the group of 6 were drafted. And G6 to P4 transfers, 39 of them were drafted. And what does that mean long term for the G6 in college football? There was also a thought I saw, Andrew Brandt, I believe, was the one who had it, who said, well, you know, all the coaches in the league, all the GMs are saying that the day 3 picks just aren't as good as they used to be because of NIL. I'm like, and that's a bad thing? You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah,
I actually think that's a good thing. And you saw the list of NBA players, underclassmen going pro it's like 71, I want to say. And that used to be a big problem, right? Players would get bad advice and they would go pro, not get drafted or get drafted late and wouldn't work out well. So I do think, you know, and that's the thing, like NIL, is it perfect? Absolutely not. Is the NCAA perfect? No. But I do think there are positives to it, and I think it does, in some theory, help the sport. But where we're at right now, as a college football fan, I am a little bit worried about, you know, the next decade plus of where this sport is headed for the G6 and beyond, right? Because it's essentially becoming a farm system for the power conferences.
Yeah, I think it's fair to ask, is this data going to get used against them, right? Because the coaches have always made the argument they're not playing the same sport. I mean, I guess we're already kind of limiting them. Like, coming up in this playoff, no matter what, they're basically only getting one team in.
Well, and even to go a step further, I mean, the first 2 picks of the NFL draft started their careers at Cal and Stanford.
Right.
And historically speaking, I mean, those are power four institutions. They would have kept those players, and maybe Cal and or Stanford would have been really good a year ago. But because of where we're at, Fernando Mendoza didn't do anything wrong. Went into the transfer portal, goes to Indiana, wins a national title, wins the Heisman Trophy. He's the number one pick. David Bailey didn't do anything wrong. His coach got fired. He was going to stay at Stanford. But the situation with their coach, whether it was right or wrong that Stanford's coach, Troy Taylor, got fired, I think he's suing them, and I think he might have won that case. But coach gets fired. Birdie gets in his ear saying, you know, you'd make a lot of money if you left. Okay. Goes to Texas Tech, gets 14.5 sacks, plays in the playoff, 2nd overall pick. So it's not even the G6. It's also the lower level P4. And it's like, as we continue to do this, what's the divide going to be? And we'll always have upsets. You know, we talked about during March Madness. Yeah, High Point beat Wisconsin. That was really cool. They were competitive against Arkansas. But the reality is the gap is widening, and it's bigger than it's ever been between the G6 and the P4, the top of the P4 and the bottom of the P4.
Yeah, like I even think back to compare last year with Tulane and JMU and compare it to Boise. Like, I almost wonder, though, if that Boise team's going to end up being the outlier. Because that Boise team, basically, what, they took Oregon to the last possession?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know,
they were outclassed overall by Penn State. But I thought for the most part,
it was a two-score game, wasn't it?
It wasn't like a absolute blasting. And look, Notre Dame went to the national championship 2 years ago and lost to Northern Illinois. Like,
yeah, I do think it's going to be really hard come playoff time, though.
Yeah, I think so, too. And we've seen that, right? You know, you look at...
Like, I think had Boise been in the... Had Boise been whatever... Like, what I think based on...
They would have been the 11? 10? 10 or 11? Because I think they were the 3 seed, weren't they?
They were the 3 and Arizona State was the 4.
And Clemson was the 12. So they would have been the 10. So they might have gone to... Ohio State?
No, Ohio State was the 8-9 game.
No, but they would have bumped up if we didn't have the
bye. That's true.
Because Notre Dame was the 7. They would have bumped up to 5. Ohio State would have bumped up to... They would have gone to Tennessee, I think, if I'm doing that right.
Yeah, and like I think they would have been competitive. I just think... I think all this kind of makes sense in that... That's who's going to get hit the hardest. And what I do think will also be interesting from the Big Ten SEC perspective, the big boys in the Big Ten are playing the game.
Oh, yeah.
But the rest of the conference is not. Does the rest of the conference basically adopt the SEC mantra, which is like, if we got a football team, we're going to try? Because that is what I do think would actually flip the whole tide. Because I do still believe if we're talking 1 through 16, I think the SEC is better than the Big Ten is 1 through 18. But if the rest of the league starts really spending at the same level that even the SEC is, well, then all of a sudden it's all bets are off. Because I think they have a higher ceiling in terms of spending.
Yeah, I think maybe we talked about this a year or two ago. I think the blind statement saying the SEC is bigger than the Big Ten, you can't say that anymore because the last 3 national champions have been from the Big Ten.
And it's 3 different schools. And one of which is a proverbial doormat.
Well, it was the doormat. It was correct. The worst Power 4 team in all of college football up until recently. But they're spending money, to your point. But I think it is also fair to say going to Mississippi State, which last year was the worst team in the big SEC? For argument's sake, let's just say it was.
Yeah, I mean, it's either them, Kentucky, Carolina maybe.
Going to Mississippi
Arkansas,
State.
Arkansas.
Going to Mississippi State or Arkansas. Vanderbilt is in a different world. They're kind of the unique exception. I think what you can say is going to Mississippi State or Arkansas is a lot more challenging than going to Maryland.
Yes.
Or going to
Purdue.
Rutgers or yeah. Purdue or I mean Minnesota's got a little weird weather element, so that's unique in its own right. So I think that's a fair thing to say. 1 through 16 probably still taking the SEC, but there's no real argument right now. The top of the Big Ten is better than the top of the SEC. However, the SEC, ironically enough, is kind of being helped out by Texas. Because yeah. Texas is right now, power rating-wise, the best team in the SEC heading into this year, and they are amongst the national championship favorites, along with 3 teams from the Big Ten, Ohio State, Oregon, and Indiana, in no particular order. So, yeah, I don't know. It's funny. I'm not the biggest Josh Pate guy out there, but I thought he actually had a really compelling argument about the state of college football and basically being like, yeah, ratings are up and that's a good thing, but the sustainability of where we're at as a sport, and I think it was the point he was making, 48%, I believe, of players drafted transferred at some point. So 48% of all draft picks transferred in this year's draft class. And it's like, is that good for the sport, right? Maybe it's good for Texas Tech and Indiana fans because their teams went to the playoff and Indiana won a title. But like, if you're a fan of a middle of the pack program, you're sitting there on a Saturday and you're like, oh my God, this is so awesome watching Fernando Mendoza. And then you're like, oh, he's probably gone.
I think it depends on what is your perspective, what is your point of view of good for the game. What I could argue is the reason why we see more teams that have a legitimate chance to win a national title than ever before is for that very reason.
And I think that is good for the game. So that's a point against the argument from Josh, is that, you know, how healthy was the sport when it was basically a rotation of Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State,
an LSU run,
Georgia, like it was those five. Like, and as a fan of a team that I desperately want to win a national title, but when they would get there in 18 and 12 and in 20 in Notre Dame, I knew they had no shot. But then a year ago, they did, or 2 years ago, they did. And then we see an Ole Miss make a run to the Final Four. We see a Miami make a run to the championship game. We see the doormat, as you alluded to, in Indiana. So I think there is an argument on both sides. But the days of, I mean, how many appearances did Memphis make in the New Year's Six? Two?
One.
One? Played Penn State?
Yes, in the Cotton Bowl. They were twice. They were basically two games away or a game away.
How did that one go? I can't remember.
They played Micah Parsons and like they fought valiantly, but like it was just obvious. Like one the level of talent on the field was a different sport.
But we saw Houston win a New Year's Six game. UCF won a New Year's Six game / national title.
And to be fair to Memphis, like part of that
can
they win the game is, do you draw the right matchup?
Of course.
Like Penn State was roster wise, like it was kind of the story of the James Franklin era. Probably a better team than their record was. And you know what I mean? Like versus like you know, we always remember fondly the Boise State Fiesta Bowl. But it's like the other part of the story that, you know, I guess you're an a-hole if you admit it, is like that was a really down Oklahoma team.
Right.
But that's what you have to pull that off. I don't know. I just feel like I watched the Ole Miss Tulane game in person. The gap was really wide, dude.
Yeah.
And I don't even think...
Well, it's like, you know,
like Ole Miss, like that's the other thing that we were talking about yesterday, which is kind of insane to me. And I understand if we look at the draft next year, it'll probably be included. But it's like Ole Miss was a Final Four team and they had two guys get drafted. I think there was 13 of the 16 teams in the SEC had three or more. And Ole Miss had two.
And I think it's not just, you know, it's not just who's spending the money. I mean, it also, the money's a big part of it, but I think there's also, football's a little bit different, I think, than basketball. I think, I could be wrong, but I think basketball is much more matter of fact. Like, NC State's going to pay me $1 million, and Memphis is going to pay me $800. I'm going to go to NC State. I think football, yes, it comes down to dollar and cents, but I also think, you know, there's a fit as well, and there's history and all of that. I mean, Wisconsin's got money, and they had no players drafted this year.
Well, Wisconsin has money, but they were kind of not playing the game. By all accounts now, Wisconsin's gotten into the game.
Yeah, and I mean, you see it this year with some of the players that they got, and I'm curious. I think they should have a better season.
Yeah, he's still dead man walking, especially after I saw the AD took a job at like the Big Ten Network. Ooh, yeah, boy.
Yeah, and I think their schedule. I mean,
their schedule's brutal, but like.
I mean, they're like a right now, I think they're almost a 3-touchdown underdog in week one against Notre Dame. It's Notre Dame at Penn State, USC at home, at Iowa. They don't have Oregon or Ohio State, so that's beneficial.
The one that I'm thinking, what's Penn State's win total?
I think it's like 8.5.
Because Penn State, their schedule breaks pretty nicely.
It does. They have like back-to-back tricky games. I think they play, if I remember correctly, like Indiana and Ohio State back-to-back. But outside of that, I think they'll be favored in every other game.
And
they go to Michigan. Okay, no, that's what it was. They don't play Oregon. They don't play Indiana. They don't play Ohio State. They go to Michigan, and they host USC back-to-back.
I don't know. To me, like, that's one. Because they also have their non-cons, Marshall, Buffalo, and Temple.
Road trip to the link, baby. Place is going to be jumping.
Road trip to the stink. I don't know. I guess my other takeaway from this, and I've kind of been, Topmeyer and I have talked about this. I think actually the biggest problem the SEC right now is, and they'll never admit it, I think they got a coaching problem. I think the SEC has become so incestuous, and they've convinced themselves that the thing that matters the most is like SEC experience. What that ends up creating is like a bunch of like, it's just another good old boy network. And I don't think like they have, I don't think going top to bottom, they've got great coaches. Now, one thing that would be interesting to monitor, of the guys that got fired last year, all right, let's see, Stoops, Freeze, Pittman,
Billy,
Kelly,
Sunbelt Billy.
And then Sunbelt Billy. Four of the five, you can make the argument like they were guys that from a different era and the games passed them by. And they brought in more like youth and kind of new world. But I'm not convinced that the coaching in the league top to bottom is that great.
Who's the best coach pound for pound in your opinion? I mean, it's, I guess, Kirby, multiple national titles.
I'd listen to an argument for Clark Lea. No. I want to see him do it without Diego, though.
That's fair.
That's
why I thought he would parachute out. I know it's his alma mater, but if I were him, I'd be like,
it tells me also though that he thinks that they're going to keep spending.
Yeah, I mean, they just got the number one quarterback out of the high school ranks, right? And I assume he's going to just be thrown to the wolves.
I think Lane is a very good coach. I am very fascinated about the LSU of it though, because I think Lane is a better underdog. And fighting from underneath, he's historically not been great as a front runner and the one that everyone chases. So I think that's going to be fascinating to watch there. I think Heupel's a really good coach. I don't know if he's a great coach. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And like
Heupel to me exceeded my expectations. I did not think that was a good hire. And he's done better than I anticipated at Tennessee. And I think this year is going to be really telling.
I also think with him, it's like, his quarterback gets hurt. Now, they were going to lose, even if Hooker stayed healthy, they were losing to South Carolina that night. That game was going a certain direction. But, like, their biggest fault was they got to the playoff and we misseeded Ohio State. So, like, they took
and it was also just the narrative going into that game was Ryan Day sucks, Ohio State's overrated, it's going to be Neyland North, yada, yada, yada. I mean, that was...
I mean, in fairness, the fan base did show up. I mean,
sure.
But, like, this is kind of the...
very quiet after it was 21-0 or whatever it was.
But, like, this is kind of the other problem that I have. It's like, I don't know how I define great coaching anymore. Because
Kalen DeBoer, when he was at an NAIA beating the brakes off of everybody. Now, I don't know the financial situation.
Yeah, did he have the greatest job ever? I don't know.
Yeah, might have. But
I know Fresno State. I know Fresno State's not a great job.
No, Fresno State's not a good job. He was a good coordinator at Indiana. And, you know, maybe they got the breaks of a COVID season that worked out well. But, I mean, to take Washington to the national championship. So I have a hard time with Kalen DeBoer because I thought the Alabama team was incredibly flawed, as we saw multiple times. I didn't think they should have made the playoff. But I also think Kalen DeBoer didn't forget how to coach. I think he's a pretty darn good coach. But to your point regarding Lane, it's like, it's a new world. He's not the underdog here. He's at the place that Nick Saban made the biggest college juggernaut maybe in the history of the sport.
Right. And also, it's like, it's not fair to him that that's not repeatable. Like,
and we don't know if it was, and it, we're starting to learn it more. Is Alabama more because of Nick Saban as opposed to Nick Saban is because of Alabama?
Well, I mean, there's also like a, you can't ignore this reality. Like, Saban got out of this world.
Right. And he, and Saban's a pretty smart dude and probably said, we might not have the ammo to play in the same pool as Texas or A&M.
And that's going to be the
Georgia
expectation.
Right.
And I think that's a legitimate, like, that's, I don't know, because, like, that's what I always think about with DeBoer. It's like, I think the bigger problem that I have with DeBoer is, do I think he's a bad football coach? I do not. I think his teams, though, the inconsistency that you see week to week is, like, you didn't even see this at Washington. Like, they had games where they didn't, like they weren't as explosive, but, like, the not knowing what you're going to get week to week is a new thing with DeBoer.
The fact that they went to Florida State and looked like they were outclassed and that Florida State team ended up winning five games was pretty eye-opening.
It just ran it down their throat.
Right.
Like, that's – and then I think he –
And
I
then also in 2024, like, to our initial point of the bottom feeder of the SEC is always going to be better than the bottom feeder of the Big Ten. I get going to Norman in 24 was a hostile environment, but you got curb stomped by a pretty mediocre football team in Norman in his first year.
Yeah, and, like, the problem is, like – I think, like, that Oklahoma offense scored something like 6 points. Like, that was pick sixes from Milroe, but it's like, it was just like the team just looking like, what is going on
they
here?
They had 234 yards of offense, yeah. Alabama did on that night.
Yeah, like, but then, like, I also look at it in these terms. It's like, do I really in my heart of hearts believe that Ryan Day would win big anywhere? No, I don't. Am I ever probably going to be able to test that? Probably not. He's the Ohio State coach. Like,
no.
You know what I mean? Like, and then, like, the other issue with, like, Cignetti. All right, he's on top of the world right now. But what if it turns out, like, he just has an awesome job? And I'm not saying that he's not a good coach and doesn't deserve credit for it. But we don't know all of these things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, the Cignetti one I'd push back a little bit more than Ryan Day just because historically they had been such a joke. But that said,
but I mean, think about
they it. they are now getting the funding that you have in order to.
Well, there's also this
and their first year was the first year I believe they were the betting favorite in every game except Notre Dame and Ohio State and they went 11-2.
Yeah, and we kept betting against them.
Yeah.
But, like, I would also make this point, like, Adidas is the apparel provider that is apparently more willing to get players over the finish line than Nike is.
Hmm.
And, you know,
because there's so few Adidas?
I think it's because they're trying to splash the pot and they're trying to get back in.
Got it.
And, like, that's last year was a all Adidas final.
Oh, it's for, I
never happened.
Miami's Adidas.
Yeah. All right, let's talk some NBA draft. We've got the latest from Jeremy Wu. We'll tell you where the Grizzlies, who they're looking at, and how the board shakes out. We'll talk about it next right here on Jeff Fright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Over at ESPN.com, Jeremy Wu has another mock draft that he has just released. Tim also has a Would You Rather, and I'm wondering if we have the same would you rather, because I would be curious to know. But number one, so Jeremy did not simulate a lottery. He's just doing it based on odds. Obviously, we know that who winds up in what position could also impact this draft. But going to Tim's beloved Washington Wizards, number one, A.J. DeBanza.
No pushback. I think he was a guy that people who watch the sport, and I'm not knocking people who talk to talent evaluators. You and I had this discussion a number of times. I didn't fully understand why Darren Peterson was considered the overwhelming favorite. Now, if you wanted to tell me he was 50-50, sure. And I still think it might be 50-50. But what DeBanza brings and what he brought every night, I certainly don't disagree with him being the number one projected player right now.
He also has at number two, Darren Peterson. So one and two seem to be the...
Is it fair to say that's there's not much debate there? It's 1-2 in big gap.
I think there's more debate at three than there is at one and two.
Yeah, I think so too. Like, in some order, it'll be Peterson, DeBanza.
Then at three, Cam Boozer. Four, Caleb Wilson to the Jazz. Boozer going to the Nets. Five, Darius Acuff to the Kings. Six, Keaton Wagler to the Grizzlies. Kingston.
How do you feel about that?
So Kingston Flemings would go seven. My would you rather is if both Wagler and Flemings were available, who would you rather have? I lean Flemings, but I don't know if, like, I imagine, George, wouldn't you think if we put a poll question up, wouldn't you say the fan base would probably say they'd rather have Flemings?
That's a tough one, only because of the recency, and Wagler had a better March.
But
going into kind of the tail end of Big 12 season, it was a whole lot of Kingston. Personally, I would prefer Kingston Flemings, but I think that's just the positional value there. I think he's more of a traditional one, and then also the pedigree where he played.
Man, I just did the lottery. Memphis 8. Ooh.
That's I am not, now you're in Michael Brown, Braden Burries. Oh, boy. All right, well,
I didn't realize there's a scenario that the Pacers don't have a first-round pick.
Yes, because it's top Clippers. Four protected, I believe.
Oh, boy.
Is that with the Clippers?
Yeah, so yeah. I just did a simulation. Atlanta got the one pick.
From New Orleans or from Milwaukee?
From New Orleans. Pacers drop to six, lose their pick to the Clippers. Memphis gets the eight.
Not great.
Whew. That would
now there are some terrifying scenarios.
Washington drops to five. Oh man, this would be. Imagine having the Wizards, Utah, and the Pacers in this simulation all dropped out of the top four.
So the top four in that sim were.
It was Atlanta getting it from New Orleans.
Yep.
Brooklyn, Sacramento, and the Bulls jumped up to number four. Ooh, buddy, that would be pretty wild.
That'd not be good.
No.
Also, with the 16th pick, this would make George and I happy because we've locked on this guy for no real reason other than we like the fit.
Your boy from Michigan?
No, Hans Steinbach.
Oh, Washington. I don't know why I think Michigan. Yeah, that's who I meant. The German.
So what was your would you rather?
Oh, it has nothing to do with the NBA draft. Would you rather get a Crunchwrap Supreme from Taco Bell or go to the Mets-Nats game. According to TickPick and Taco Bell, the price to go to the Nationals-Mets game on Thursday, I'm assuming that's the day game, is $6, and a Crunchwrap Supreme currently goes for $6.39.
I got a bone to pick with Taco Bell.
Fire away, please.
Bring back the Naked Chicken Chalupa. They had it like during one NCAA tournament, and the thing absolutely goes, and it just disappeared from the menu.
Is it a secret menu type deal?
No. I don't know if like it became a thing where it was like it was more expensive. Like I don't know. Like Taco Bell is obviously the king of the LTO, the limited time offering. but they haven't even brought it back like as an LTO.
Did you guys see the video of the dude going into different fast food restaurants and just yelling their slogan?
I have not.
Oh my God, it is so
so like he
good.
Walks into Moe's and yells, like, does he beat them? Does he beat them into welcome to Moe's before they can hit him with it?
So he was sitting there eating a Taco Bell and he just goes, live mas. And you just hear in the background one of the workers be like, yeah. It's so good.
So what did he yell at McDonald's? I'm loving it.
No, he did. So the four ones where he did Dunkin' Donuts.
America runs on Dunkin's?
Everyone runs on Dunkin'. He runs in there, and he's doing, like, high knees. He's like, you know why I'm jacked up? Everything runs on Dunkin'. And you just see the guys be like, what? The first one he does is Pizza Hut. Nobody out
pizza's the hut.
He's like, say it together. Nobody out pizza's the hut. He does Eat Fresh at Subway. He does In-N-Out. I was not aware of the In-N-Out jingle. You might be because you lived in California.
I love In-N-Out. I'm not aware of the jingle.
They have, I guess, from one of the commercials.
I don't ever remember. Like, I remember Carl's Jr. commercials, Jack in the Box commercials. I don't ever really remember In-N-Out commercials on TV.
I mean, based off of the lines that I see in In-N-Out out here, I don't think they need commercials.
No, they do not. It sells itself.
I'll send this to you guys, though. It's.
I don't even. What is the In-N-Out slogan? Because I don't even like. I'm an In-N-Out enthusiast.
Overrated.
The fries stink. The burger's amazing.
Burger's good. I'm just a Five Guys guy.
Yeah, that's very DC of you.
That is true.
And their fries stink, too. Like, oh, you want some soggy, oily bag fries? Oh, here you go. Welcome to In-N-Out.
Oh, man.
Cajun fries. All day, baby.
Old Bay on those bad boys.
Couldn't leave them in the fryer an extra 30 seconds? Nut? Can't do it?
Not when you have to pour 30% of your order into the bag itself.
It's fine.
I might have to get a Crunchwrap Supreme soon. I haven't had one in a while.
Go get the breakfast one.
Ooh. Never had Taco Bell breakfast.
It's pretty solid.
It's very good. For fast food breakfast?
Yeah, it's solid. Yeah. I don't have a high standard. I mean, I'm a guy that you can give me an Egg McMuffin, and I'm like, all right, it's fine.
I just like that they replaced the tortilla in the middle hash brown.
For a while, what were they doing with, like, the waffle? They had, like, a... Oh,
was it, like, a waffle taco? Like, chicken and waffle taco
like that? That was pretty solid.
I don't think I actually got to try that one. Was it an LTO?
Yeah, that was another LTO. Just run into Chick-fil-A, eat more chicken.
Run in a giant cow costume. Actually, wait, is that too on the nose? Do people just still do that?
Is eat more chicken still their slogan?
Yeah.
I guess In-N-Out was, this is quality you can taste.
Yeah, they have quality you can taste. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah. Again,
this clip is great.
The fries stink.
The first guy at pizza who just daps him up after.
The other problem, though, is do we really want to encourage this as a society?
Eating fast food or yelling at fast food restaurants?
The highly orchestrated TikTok video.
Yeah, I mean, look.
That's fair.
It is. It's very orchestrated, but... And I'm sure there were plenty of moments where he did not get the reaction that he was hoping for.
I mean, in the end, like, I guess...
It made me laugh.
Net positive, he is bringing more people enjoyment than not.
Right.
But I do not like the idea that we are... And maybe you're fighting a losing battle, but, like, the encouraging society to go viral, I don't think is a net positive.
The only thing I'll say is that this overall is just genuinely positive.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
negativity. He's not being, it's not a gotcha. It's just like going into the fast food restaurant, being positive about their slogan. Yes, I would say overall the obsession of trying to go viral and manufacture things, but this particular video just made me laugh.
All right, tonight we got... All right, so we got to do it in the order. So tonight we have two ESPN and an NBC game, right? I'm pretty sure he goes ESPN and then NBC is not doing yes. Peacock. It's NBC yeah. Peacock, but I don't think it's the...
It's not the NBCSN.
Yeah.
ESPN,
NBC proper, ESPN.
All right. Celtics, 11.5-point favorite. That is 6 o'clock ESPN. Knicks, 6.5-point favorite over the Hawks. That is our NBC game. And then tonight, Spurs, Blazers. Spurs, 11.5-point game. All right, I had some numbers for you. So the first round, it's interesting if you compare the first round numbers to last year.
Mm-hmm.
So the average margin of victory in the first round so far is 12.8 points per game. Last year was 13.4. Blowouts as defined by 15 points or more, through 33 games, we've had 10 in the first round. That's 30.3%. Last year we had 16 blowouts in 42 games. That's 38.1%. So we have slightly gone down. But the number of one-possession games is 3 out of 33, 9%. Last year it was 12 out of 42, 28.6%. And the number of single-digit games has shrunk to 12 out of 33 so far. And last year we had 22 out of 42. So it's this weird thing of, like, we have... on paper, technically closer games this year, but we have a lesser quantity of actual good games. Because that's kind of the other thing I've noticed as I'm watching all night, and you, I'm sure, are in the sports book. I'm not even trying to be NBA hater, but, like, you can't take your eyes off the fact that every hockey game is basically, like, coming down to the end.
Yep.
And then it feels like you're just... forcing yourself to make it to the end of an NBA game, and then, God forbid, we had the worst of both worlds last night. Guys, that Detroit-Orlando game set basketball back decades. That was not
John
good for
Triple
the sport.
J were there to take it all in, baby.
They were listen, it was great. They're supporting their boy Dez, but how many missed free throws? How many missed, like, just wide open shots? And, like, that, the most fitting moment of the night, I did feel like, was Dez banking in the three as the dagger. Like, it wasn't even like a swish. It's just a banked in three. And it's like, yep, that's exactly how this game deserves to end.
I mean, yeah, to your point, you know, you always hear it, and it's just, it rings true. And I would say I'm more locked in on the NBA playoffs just because I think from a strategy standpoint, trying to do what we do, a familiarity standpoint, people know
we know way more basketball players than we do hockey players.
But the great thing about hockey is that I can sit back as a sports fan, have no idea what they should do schematically, and just enjoy the hell out of the game. And that's what... You know, I got home from work last night, and the Golden Knights and Utah Mammoth were playing until, like, what, probably almost 1 a.m. your time?
I mean, it went to...
And we were moments away from going to double overtime, and Vegas won it.
I would say it went to... It was 11 o'clock when the third period ended. So, what, the overtime period got going probably around, what, 11:20?
Give or take.
It was probably around midnight your time.
I feel like the game ended... close to midnight.
Yeah, that's about right.
But yeah, I mean, it's just, without fail, it does feel like hockey playoffs always tend to deliver.
And, like, this isn't even me trying to, like, force a hockey versus NBA
thing.
No, I'm
not either.
It's like, I'm just sitting there watching. I've got all the games on the screen, and it's like, man, the one that's way more interesting is the hockey game.
And I think that's nothing new, as you pointed out with the numbers, right? First rounds in the NBA, for the most part, tend to be rather lopsided.
We got good teams playing bad teams in general.
Right. And well, for whatever reason, in hockey, the good teams and the bad teams seem to be synced up a little bit closer. I mean, I guess outside, George, correct me if I'm wrong, the Avs, they took care of business.
Oh,
they might be a wagon.
Might be.
We got to see him.
No, you're right. You're right.
But other than that, yeah, I mean.
This does feel like the best chance the President's Cup trophy winner has to win the title in a very long time.
Absolutely.
Because it doesn't feel flukish.
But we do have a one seed who's down 3-1 in the NBA, which almost never happens.
Yeah, and like, I don't know, like that's kind of the other, like that's another thing I think about with the NBA, which is, are we all validated? Now, I know Wagner's not going to play most likely next game. He's got a calf strain.
Yep.
But do we all deserve some credit for going, we don't believe in Detroit all year?
Yeah.
And it's like, is that a good thing that you're number one seed in a conference? It's like, yeah, we don't believe in them. And now I do actually think Orlando was a bad draw as an eight because they put their team together on the fly. They had chemistry issues early. Then they had injury issues throughout the year. But then they started to get healthier. They were probably better than an eight. But here you are. Like, but you should... If you're a 60-win team, you should be beating this team.
Well, also, in the East, I mean, Atlanta is right there with the Knicks, so I guess it's not a foregone conclusion that Atlanta or New York's going to win this series, but it goes back to what we said a couple weeks ago, reconfirmed it today. It's like, we might have an Eastern Conference semifinals between the Magic and the Raptors?
Yeah.
I mean... Has there ever been an Eastern Conference semifinal sent to NBA TV?
I think only because they couldn't. NBA like, TV, I think, went away in the second round.
Like but we might have
this.
We could have Lakers Thunder, Spurs Nuggets, Celtics Knicks, and Magic Raptors.
Mm-hmm.
That's
on NBC
good.
SN.
Yeah, push it to streaming only.
Correct. All right, my man, we'll let you go.
All right, see you guys.
That is Tim Murray of VSiN. We come back, we tell your story next right here on Jeff Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, George, for today's Don't Tell The Story, tell your story. We have to go to Mark Toothmaker. Who might he be? Well, this is a story that has been going viral because remember the Younghoe Koo horrific field goal attempt from the Giants earlier during the season?
How could I forget?
Yeah, one of the all-time just absolute worst kicks. Apparently, according to Mark Toothmaker, that kick might have saved his life. Watching from bed alongside his wife Mallory, who was reading a book, Giants kicker Younghoe Koo whiffed on a field goal attempt in real life, in a real-life scene reminiscent of Charlie Brown and Lucy in the Peanuts cartoon. Rewinding and watching the replay, Toothmaker laughed so hard it caused a seizure. A CT scan revealed a tennis ball-sized tumor on the left side of his brain. When you hear the news, you've got a tumor. That's what nobody wants to hear, his wife said. Toothmaker was then transferred to the University of Kentucky's hospital where the tumor was surgically removed and turned out to be benign. He was home by the end of the week with no lasting damages. On Saturday, he will be at Churchill Downs as Spendthrift Farm owned Further Ado is set to run in the Kentucky Derby. That kicker saved my life. Because it could have happened any other time. I wholeheartedly believe I was in the right spot at the right time, and he was the trigger for that happening. It was a miracle. Younghoe Koo's kick saved his life by causing a seizure.
Good job, Younghoe.
Again, glad it happened.
Lifesaver.
Yeah. More maybe Younghoe Koo's, that's got to be his spin zone.
Has to be now.
Saved a life. That kick saved a life. Want to thank Tim Murray and Eric Hasstein for being on the program. If you missed anything, it'll be up on the podcast shortly after the program ends. For George, this is Jeffrey saying thanks for listening. Keep listening. The Gabe Kuhn Show is coming up next.